TUC Radio San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Nuclear Y2K Symposium, March 8, 1999, part 2 of a series of 4. Emergency power and nuclear reactors. Most utility companies in the US say they cannot guarantee uninterrupted electric power when the clocks turn on December 31, 1999. However, all 103 nuclear power plants in the US are designed to immediately shut down when the grid fails, and not one of them is able to black start, that is, start up again, without electric power from the grid. While the plant is down, it must deal with the enormous heat and radiation generated by the nuclear fuel rods. Pumps need to move 30 to 40,000 gallons per minute through the reactor core and 500 to 2,000 gallons per minute through the spent fuel pool. The safety of the plant and that of the people around hinges on the emergency diesel generators that are located at each nuclear power plant. If the generators fail and fuel begins to melt, core damage or a meltdown may begin as early as in 2 hours, depending on the design of the plant. Today's speakers present a long list of problems with emergency generators that need to be addressed now. Will they be able to run for more than a day? Will there be enough fuel? And are the pumps of the spent fuel pool even connected to the emergency generator system? Here is Paul Gunter from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. He was one of the speakers at the Nuclear Y2K Symposium on March 8, 1999. The symposium was convened by Dr. Helen Caldicott's organization STAR and co-chaired by Congressman Ed Markey. Here is Ed Markey. He's introducing Paul Gunter.
Our next speaker is somebody who's dedicated his entire adult life to the issues of reactor safety. He has worked as the director of the Reactor Watchdog Project at the Nuclear Information and Resource Service since 1991. Prior to that, he worked for 15 years as co-founder of the Clamshell Alliance, looking at the safety issues related to the Seabrook Nuclear Generating Station along the New Hampshire coast. This is a man who should be heard. Please, a warm welcome for Paul Gunter.
Thank you, Congressman. The reliability of off-site power is critical to nuclear safety. The steady availability of off-site power is essential to prevent nuclear hazards in the daily operation of this technology. If off-site power is lost, emergency diesel generators on-site at nuclear power stations are necessary to provide backup power to operate important components of the reactor and waste storage areas. Off-site power is referred to by NRC as the preferred power system at nuclear power stations, providing electricity to numerous safety and non-safety related systems, including the reactor coolant system, recirculation pumps, and the main water feed system and power conversion systems. The steady supply of off-site power is considered so important that components used to transmit electricity from the grid to nuclear power stations are designed to minimize the chance of failure during station operation. The Y2K issue now raises a broad range of uncertainty for electrical power grid reliability, with the potential for brief and perceptible interruptions of local or regional power transmission systems, or the catastrophic failure of a grid system for an unknown duration. In the event of grid failure and loss of off-site power, nuclear power stations reliant upon the grid system for power will scram or automatically shut down with the rapid insertion of control rods and cease production of electricity. Nuclear power stations are neither designed nor capable of black start or the ability to operate independent of available off-site alternating current electricity. Normally, nuclear power stations slowly coast down from 100% power levels with the gradual insertion of control rods. However, this rapid insertion as the result of a scram is comparable to slamming on your brakes in a speeding car. It is a sudden activity, the violent maneuver, potentially challenging safety systems and leading to component malfunction. Once scrammed, a nuclear power station must address the tremendous amount of heat generated by the atomic reaction within the fuel core. A substantial number of systems normally used to cool the reactor are lost and unavailable with the loss of off-site power. Emergency alternating current power must then be generated on-site to maintain stability of the reactor core and prevent fuel damage by removal of this residual heat via coolant pumps and motor-operated components. Emergency diesel generators are designed to provide this emergency power and charge on-site auxiliary batteries necessary for the duration of any grid instability or failure. A station blackout of long duration in excess of 2 hours leads to auxiliary battery depletion of AC conversion and subsequent loss of vital instrumentation and control features. The uncovering of the core and its associated hazards can occur within a range of 3 to 10 hours beyond the time of battery depletion without restoration of alternating current power in both the pressurized water reactor and the boiling water reactor, respectively. One NRC report, Severe Accident Risks, an Assessment of 5 U.S. Nuclear Power Stations, as we refer to New Reg 1150, states that with a combination of grid failure, battery failure, and emergency diesel generator failure, quote, core damage begins approximately 1 hour as the result of coolant boil-off, unquote, or the uncovering of the reactor core. Accident scenarios for times from the start of a fuel melt to containment failure range between 2 hours to more than 24 hours. According to NRC's Office of Analysis and Evaluation of Operational Data, this report was March 20, 1997, the station blackout studies have assumed the grid to be a stable and reliable system. This may be a very critical error. So let's then look at the emergency diesel generators and their reliability. In December 1998, NERS filed 3 petitions for rulemaking to NRC regarding Y2K. A compilation of US NRC reports for every month of 1997 and 1998 indicate a wide range of new and reoccurring problems potentially affecting emergency diesel generator operability. All 3 of New York Indian Point's Unit 3 emergency diesel generators were declared inoperable due to multiple circuit breaker problems resulting in cold shutdown of the reactor. A high-level emergency, an alert status, was declared at Detroit Edison's Fermi Unit 2 when a fire broke out in the emergency diesel generator control panel, causing the generator's operator to shut down the diesel generator and flee the building. NERS continues to monitor these daily event reports for emergency diesel generator problems and continues to find evidence of a range of potential operability issues, including vendor reports on inoperable equipment, diesel generators found to be outside of technical specifications, and equipment degradation. It is our concern that some number of nuclear utilities may not be accurately reporting reliable restart data for their emergency diesel generators. NERS is aware that on at least one occasion, a nuclear utility falsified data relative to the reliability of its emergency diesel generators. On March 20th, 1990, the Vogel Unit 1 in Georgia declared a site area emergency due to the loss of off-site power when a truck hit a tower in the switchyard. At the same time, the station experienced the loss of all available on-site emergency diesel generator capability when the one operable diesel generator tripped after starting. As a result, the unit went into station blackout and an associated heat up of the reactor coolant system before emergency diesel generators were successfully started and restored emergency power. The NRC report documents that the Georgia Power Company deliberately violated federal regulation and their licensing condition by falsifying material statements made to NRC regarding the reliability of their emergency diesel generators. Consequently, recognizing these concerns, NERS has submitted its petition for rulemaking requesting that NRC require all emergency diesel generators be operable with a 60-day supply of fuel oil on site. We also request that NRC provide top-level emergency classification to all the power systems and components for providing coolant to large inventories of irradiated fuel in storage ponds at each of these reactors. The petition would also require that additional emergency alternating current power generators be installed at each reactor site to provide broader margin of reliability for protection of health and safety. Thank you.
That was Paul Gunter from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, NIRS. He spoke at the Nuclear Y2K Symposium on March 8, 1999, in Washington, D.C. The following morning, I visited the Union of Concerned Scientists and spoke with their nuclear safety engineer, David Lockbaum. David worked for the nuclear industry for 17 years and has a degree in nuclear engineering from the University of Tennessee. We sat at his desk, looking down on the floor plan of the Grand Gulf Nuclear Power Plant in Mississippi, where he had worked for 4 years. I asked him to explain the spent fuel pool area and the emergency generators. In about 15 minutes, David and I will give you several important phone numbers and websites. Please get a pen and paper to take them down. Here first is my conversation with David Lockbaum. The two locations that came up over and over again during the meeting were the spent fuel pool and the generator building. Can you take us to the spent fuel pool first?
Sure. In boiling water reactors like Grand Gulf, the spent fuel pool is located within the reactor containment building, the largest structure on site. The spent fuel pool is basically a swimming pool that houses radioactive fuel after it's been removed from the reactor. The spent fuel pool at U.S. plants typically holds 4 to 5 times as much radioactive fuel as is in the reactor core because of this country has a problem with what to do with high-level waste, and the plants must store it on site for as long as they operate. So this spent fuel pool located inside the containment building has quite a bit of radioactive fuel. The reason that's an issue is that fuel, as well as the fuel in the reactor, continues to generate heat and release radioactivity for many years, even after it's removed from the reactor core. And that heat and that radiation must be dealt with properly, or plant workers or the general public can be affected. The spent fuel pool is generally about 45 foot deep. The fuel bundles that reside in this thing are about 14 foot long and occupy the lower region. So there's about 30 feet of water above the spent fuel to the surface of the water. If for some reason that water were to drain down to just the top of the spent fuel, the dose rate to somebody standing at the railing around the spent fuel pool would be such that they get a lethal dose in 16 seconds. So it is a fairly significant problem that has to be dealt with, or there can be very tragic consequences.
Before we go on to the generator building, which is really important, let's talk for a moment about what happens
if power gets shut down to the nuclear power plant, what happens, since we were just there, what happens in the spent fuel pool area?
If the electrical grid to which the nuclear power plant is connected were to suffer an outage such that the grid goes down and there's no power available to the nuclear power plant or to your homes and businesses, at most United States reactors, the systems that cool the spent fuel pool will stop running because they use electricity from the grid, and if the grid goes down, they stop running. In that event, the heat from the irradiated fuel that's in the swimming pool will cause it to slowly heat up. Depending on how recently that radioactive fuel has been placed into that swimming pool, the fuel pool itself can start to boil in as little as a day, and at most plants it will be 3 days, 4 days, or perhaps a week or more before it heats up to the point where it starts to boil. The problem with a plant like a boiling water plant like Grand Gulf is that once a fuel pool starts to boil, because it's inside the reactor containment building, the steam and the vapor from the boiling pool affect equipment that are needed to protect the reactor core. In any plant, whether it's a pressurized water reactor or a boiling water reactor, a boiling spent fuel pool is a problem because it's very hard to make it stop boiling. The way the system works, it's like a swimming pool. You fill it up, and there's this right along at the edge of the pool, there's the overflow, and the overflow goes into a system that then cools the water and returns it to the swimming pool. If the water's boiling, you have basically beer foam at the top, and that beer foam goes in to the overflow, and it's difficult to get enough water in there to reestablish circulation. If you flood up the pool with just a lot of water and overfill it, you get enough water to go into those overflows, but you also just overflow the pool altogether. And because in a plant like Grand Gulf, this is at the basically in the attic of the building, that overflow of water then floods down into the basement and causes other equipment that you need to stop working because it's flooded. So you have, it's a very nasty scenario to get into, and you need to avoid that at all costs.
Let's look for a moment at the generator building. I learned that all nuclear power plants have on-site diesel generators to produce electricity in case there's a shutdown. And since we haven't talked about the reactor vessel itself that much, that is also very dependent on electricity. So maybe we should take one step back and say, what happens when the grid collapses to which this nuclear power plant has been feeding its electricity?
Well, the reason that there was a year 2000 meeting yesterday to talk about nuclear power plants and there wasn't a year 2000 meeting to talk about coal-fired plants or oil-fired plants is that if the electrical grid to which a power plant is connected fails or goes down, that power plant also shuts down automatically, whether it's oil-fired, coal-fired, or nuclear-powered. In an oil-fired or coal-fired plant, the generator shuts down and the systems just turn off. At a nuclear power plant, the radioactive fuel that's in the reactor vessel and in the swimming pool, the spent fuel pool, continue to generate heat and continue to generate radioactivity. And that even after the grid goes down, you need to be able to cool the fuel in both of those locations and protect the radiation that's emitted from those sources. So to do that, all plants in this country have emergency diesel generators on site. The problem that we see is that these emergency diesel generators are generally not configured to provide power to the system that cools the swimming pool. At some plants, they can be manually aligned to cool the system that serves the spent fuel pool. But most plants, even those plants that have that capability, haven't looked at the necessity of cooling both the reactor vessel and the swimming pool to ensure that they have enough capacity on the diesel generator to handle both of those loads, because they're they're fairly substantial, particularly in the first few hours after the grid goes down. There was a plant, the Fitzpatrick plant in New York State, earlier this year, had an event where there was a hydrogen fire at the plant site. The fire was outside the plant buildings, but it was close to the electrical transformers that are used to transmit the electricity to the grid. The concern was that if the hydrogen tanks blew up, they would damage those transformers and cause the electrical grid to go down, essentially, and isolate the plant. As a safety precaution, the plant owners manually started the emergency diesel generators, so they would be available in case the transformer blew up and the plant suffered a loss of power. Days after this event, after they put out the fire and things were back to normal, they looked at it closer and they found that with the diesel generators already running, had the transformer failed, they would have stayed running, but they wouldn't have provided power to the equipment inside the plant. So you would have been running with no power from the grid, no power from the diesel generators, which was a very untenable position to be in. So their safety precaution was actually a step backwards. If they had just left the diesel generators alone, they would have started automatically and provided power. So that was a precautionary move that was actually a step backwards. And it's an issue we're trying to get the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to see, because some plant owners are saying that on December 31st, they'll start their emergency diesel generators as a precaution. Well, if it's a step backwards, that's not the right thing to do. So we're trying to get people to look at that and see if that's really a smart thing to do. And it may not even be that isolated a case. Last summer, a tornado hit the Davis-Besse plant outside of Toledo, Ohio, and knocked out its transmission lines, which basically isolated the plant from the grid. The emergency diesel generators started automatically and did everything they were supposed to do. It took the plant about 25 hours to restore off-site power to the facility. The diesel generators failed 26 hours after they started because it was in the middle of summer. The diesel generators produce a lot of heat as they run, and the building in which the diesel generators were stored got too hot. As a result of too much temperature in that room, the equipment started to fail. Luckily, the off-site power was restored 1 hour before the diesel generators failed. But the important thing to remember is these diesel generators are designed to run for 30 days in case of an extended loss of grid, and they only lasted 26 hours.
What can people who hear this interview do?
STAR, the Standing for Truth About Radiation, Helen Caldicott's organization, is developing a list of questions that are intended for people living around nuclear power plants to ask their local utility company to see if they are indeed ready for year 2000. It has a lot of questions about how you cool the spent fuel pool, what are you planning to do in case your security computer crashes, a lot of these questions. What we intend to do is to maintain this as a living set of questions, so as new questions come up, they'll be added to the list. Right now, that list is going to be added to the NIRS website at www.nirs.org, and it will be continually updated as people send in questions, and the answers will be different from utility to utility. If you go into a public forum, whether a public meeting or a NRC meeting near the site, and ask these questions, and if you're not comfortable with the answers, I think it's a pretty good sign that that utility may not be ready, and you need to get the media and other folks involved in making sure they are ready, make sure they have the answers to these questions.
Do you have any connections to the unions?
We have some contacts. Most often, we're viewed as an enemy by the trade unions because the concern is that safety concerns will cause the plant to be permanently shut down and the jobs will be lost. If you look at our record, the issues we've raised have very seldom shut a plant down permanently. Generally, they cause more work to be done to fix the issue we raised, and then the plant, after it fixes the problem, whatever it is, starts back up and not only is operated safely, but there's been more jobs in the process.
I'm asking this because for people to get truthful answers, it would be really wonderful if some of the staffs could get involved as well, because administrators often downplay things, to put it gently. And since the NRC isn't really a watchdog group at this point yet, I think to get the involvement of people who really work there, whose own lives are at stake in this as well, to help in resolving these safety issues would be really a good idea.
I agree with that. Some of the questions that are on the list, the initial list, came from plant workers. We, not acting as a steward of a union, they sent the question to myself or one of my colleagues saying, here's an issue at our plant. They felt it may not be getting proper attention. They knew that we can put a spotlight on things. We never are able to fix anything, but we can put a spotlight on things sometimes and allow others to fix it.
So people can actually write to you or call you? What's the best way to reach you?
Phone calls at 202-332-0900 here in D.C. We also get a large number of anonymous letters that sometimes they come from people who work for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Sometimes they work from people who work at plant sites. I also get a lot of calls from people, because I worked for 17 years in the industry and worked at a number of plants, I have a lot of former colleagues that work at various plants. I get a lot of calls from them saying, here's a safety issue. I would rather you champion this issue than me champion this issue, because if I do it, I could lose my job.
That was David Lockbaum, nuclear safety engineer for the Union of Concerned Scientists. Please drop him a note if you have information or a safety concern. The mailing address for the Union of Concerned Scientists is 1616 P Street, Northwest, Suite 310, Washington, D.C., 20036. That's 1616 P Street, Northwest, Suite 310, Washington, D.C., 20036. David Lockbaum was one of the expert speakers in March of 1999 at the Nuclear Y2K Symposium in Washington, D.C. The symposium was convened by the Australian physician Dr. Helen Caldicott and her organization STAR, by Congressman Ed Markey, NIRS, and the Union of Concerned Scientists. You heard part two of a four-part series from the Nuclear Y2K Symposium on emergency power and nuclear reactors. The full one-hour tape of Emergency Power and Nuclear Reactors is $10. A transcript and 15 pages of information, including the list of questions to ask of nuclear power plant owners in your area, is $8. If you want both the tape, transcript, and information, send us $15. Send the correct amount to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. For a credit card order, call TUC Radio toll-free at 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. The music is by G.S. Sarstev. My name is Mariah Gallardin. Thank you for listening.